From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. On today's program, Homegrown in Florida. This new book from the University Press of Florida is a collection of short stories and essays about coming of age in the Sunshine State. Its contributors include some of the state's best-known writers of fiction and nonfiction. The selections range from whimsical to sad to funny to dark. We're joined by editor William McKean, who chairs the Department of Journalism at Boston University, and contributor Jeff Klinkenberg, who writes about Florida culture for the Tampa Bay Times. And 'tis the season for giving and lots of shopping. David Morris, consumer advocate for the Sun Newspapers, joins us with some advice on how to keep your shopping experience positive. First, this news. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm Valerie Alker. On today's program, consumer advocate David Morris with the Sun Newspapers has some advice for us on how to keep our holiday shopping experiences positive. But first, Homegrown in Florida. This new book from the University Press of Florida is a collection of essays, short stories, and poems about coming of age in the Sunshine State. It draws from the experiences of a wide range of writers. Many are well known, and many have had long careers in journalism chronicling other people's stories. Many of the entries are memoirs. Some are short fiction with a decidedly Florida point of view. Joining us is William McKean, who edited Homegrown in Florida. He's the author of 9 books, including the anthology Rock and Roll is Here to Stay. Welcome, William McKean.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and thanks so much for joining us. Also, we have up with us on the line Jeff Klinkenberg, who writes about Florida culture for the Tampa Bay Times and writes books, too. I found one on the shelf in my office titled Pilgrim in the Land of Alligators. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Jeff, I know you moved to Florida at a very young age. William, you were here during some formative years, and I understand you two, along with Tim Dorsey of Surge Storms fame, came up with the idea for Homegrown in Florida. How did that happen?
Well, Jeff sent me a DVD. He's such a vain person. He made an autobiographical film some years ago taken from his mother's home movies. And I was lucky enough to be on the list to receive the life story of Jeff Klinkenberg on DVD. And just looking at it brought back so many memories because although Jeff is significantly older than me, we were in Florida, South Florida at the same time. And so I saw the things that I recall from my childhood. And we worked together with Dorsey at the same time, but Dorsey had come to visit me when I was at the University of Florida just the day before this film arrived from Jeff. And we were talking about our childhood in Florida and what a different place it was then. And so this idea started percolating to collect some stories about growing up. And boy, once I put out the word, the floodgates opened and people started sending me things. People I didn't even know sent me stories that ended up in the book. And Jeff has 2 stories in there. Tim has 1 piece. I have 2. It's a pretty wide selection. We wanted to make sure it just didn't represent, middle-aged white guys like us, but to try and have, or in Jeff's case, elderly, but to try and have a cross-section of Florida.
So, Jeff, what inspired you to put together this movie of your life and send it to all your friends?
Well, my mom had passed away, and I was going through her closets and stuff, and I found all these old home movies, and didn't have a way to play them. But I brought them to one of these businesses that will put them on digital tape. And then I looked at them. I thought, gosh, this is my childhood here. And so I edited some of those movies and some old photographs and postcards with a voiceover into like a little 30-minute film with many copyright violations with music and stuff, just for my kids and friends, and I called it a history, an incomplete history of a Florida boyhood. And, you know, some of it was funny, and I thought, you know, Bill would like to Bill McKean would like to see the life that one of his elders had led in the Miami area anyway.
You know, looking at the cover of Homegrown in Florida, which is illustrated with a photograph of a 60s-style Florida house with awning windows and folks sitting outside in lawn chairs, and then snapshots of kids fishing and playing ball and going to the beach, you think you're in for a froth of a read, but it's really, as I mentioned in the intro, much deeper than that. What, William, guided your choices for the book?
I just wanted something that represented the diversity of the state. I think Florida is unlike any other state in the country in that sense. I wanted to have the Cuban experience represented. I wanted to have the African-American experience represented. I wanted it to be about all ages of childhood. I wanted it to be geographically represented from the Keys to Pensacola and really show the breadth of growing up in Florida, because Florida is unique, and it's in many ways it's a strange place to grow up, and people elsewhere in the country are fascinated by Florida, good for good or for ill. So it was just that I wanted a variety. I wanted a different kinds of things too. I have a couple of poems. I have memoirs, short stories. I have song lyrics. I have the transcript of an interview with Tom Petty about what changed his life, and some of the stories are they ended up being kind of dark because you know I think I say in the introduction that you know childhood is sometimes difficult when we're living through it, but it's over much too soon. It's like that old joke: the food is lousy here. Yes, in such small portions. So you're looking back on childhood, there's naturally a lot of pain, and Jeff wrote a story that's in the book about the death of a friend in childhood that I think is one of the most powerful things I've ever written. Don't tell him I gave him a compliment, but that it was it's just immensely sad, and the irony is that I started on this thing actually about 5 or 6 years ago, and then I did 2 other books in between. This one kept being backburnered. But anyway, when I finally got back to it, the original working title of the book had been Paradise Recalled. But then I thought, so many of these stories are just too dark that you know, Paradise doesn't even work as irony. So thank God the publisher came up with the title Homegrown in Florida.
And you were looking, you know, you said you were looking for geographic to represent Florida's, you know, ethnic diversity, geographic diversity, but also you cover really the range of human emotions in the book as well. This is WGCU Gulf Coast Live. You can comment on today's program on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. You can call us at 877-428-8255. You know, adolescence is a very challenging part of life, whether you live in Michigan or Iowa or Maine or Florida. But in your opinion, is there something unique to the Florida experience, or was there in the 1960s and 70s, which many of the contributors in the book write about?
Well, this is Jeff, and I'll tell you this. The thing about growing up in Florida in the 50s and in the 60s, and actually even now, I mean, I certainly know people whose children have kind of that wild, barefoot, Huck Finn life. Maybe not quite like I did, but it was so... kids were a little bit wild, and you know, I'm going to sound like Grandpa here and give Bill McKean some satisfaction, but it was a time when, you know, when you could leave your house in the morning and not come back until the afternoon, and your parents wouldn't miss you. They would just trust that you were okay, and of course, most of the time we were, but we were doing these crazy things, you know, jumping off bridges, building rafts, climbing fences, you know, running through yards, climbing 50, 60, 70 feet into trees and stuff. usually in our bare feet, tetanus shots, you know, every couple of years because we were stepping on nails. And I know stepping on nails sounds fun, but so it was a very free, wild, fun life. But of course, the dark side of that was every once in a while something awful could happen, and it did, you know. And so when I think back on my life, it's mostly just happy times. And, you know, sometimes I'm able to mine those things in my writing, but I'm certainly aware of how quickly, you know, you could lose your innocence, even in a time that, when we think back, we think of as a very innocent time.
And Jeff, as William mentioned, there are two chapters in the book from you. One is very sad. You had a childhood friend who was killed literally in front of your eyes. The other, about a stinky old lady who hated the neighborhood kids, and so accordingly you tormented her, and, you know, we've all been there. Is it your philosophy as a writer to explore the mix of emotions you present to your readers?
Say that again, Valerie. I didn't quite...
Is it your philosophy as a writer to present the range of human emotions to your readers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you try to reflect what life is all about. And so those things, you know, are part of life, the good and the bad and the in-between. And you're talking about an essay I wrote about Miss Olive. Olive Posner was her name, who lived a couple doors down from me, who was sort of the neighborhood grouch, and to the kids she was the witch. You know, stooped over elderly woman with a cane who lived next to the field where we played baseball. And, of course, if you hit a ball in her yard, she'd run out and claim it and scream at us. And, you know, as a kid, she's tormenting you. But as you get older, you start to realize, boy, how lonely she was. And she had this life, too. And in her case, she had at some point in her life sung opera. And so she'd call the police, and the police would go into her house, and then you would hear her performing for these policemen. So it was pretty sad, you know. But and you know, I think that every neighborhood in Florida, and probably every neighborhood in North America, you know, had somebody like Miss Olive. So you know, you write about the specific, but you hope you writers always hope to start with the specific, but to somehow reach a universal.
Yeah, we had an older lady in our neighborhood. I won't say her name, but she had a very enticing pear tree in her backyard, and we would steal her pears, and she would yell at us. William, your book also includes writing from Zora Neale Hurston, who died in 1960 and wrote about the African-American experience, and from Tosh Brown, who wrote about life in the Everglades and died in 1996. What was your reason for including their work in the book?
Well, I kind of wanted a historical context, so I wanted older things. In fact, I had a passage from Marjorie Kuhn Rollins, The Yearling, picked out, but we couldn't work out the rights for that. But we also have a chapter from a wonderful book that came out in the 1940s about this about a Florida childhood by a writer named Rob White, also deceased. But it was called The Lion's Paw. I know Jeff's a big fan of that book, too. And it was an essential part of growing in Florida in my childhood to read that book and to read it several times. And, you know, I have a couple copies of it now, and my boys read it. So I just didn't want it to be recent stories. I wanted things that came from an earlier time, and I sort of wish I had that piece from The Yearling in there because it was a little bit more primeval than anything else we have, but it does sort of establish the template for a Florida childhood, what happened to Jody in that book.
And actually, the book, doesn't it open with a quote from Marjorie Kennan Rawlings in the front piece? I believe.
Right. It's,
yeah.
It's one of those wistful things about childhood and how fleeting it is. And it's a beautiful piece. Just that quote, I think, is it. That's my way of making sure that we honor her, even if we can't get the okay from the estate to use a whole piece of hers.
Did you have to reject many contributions? You said you put out the word. You heard from a lot of people. Did you have?
I have a few that held back. I wouldn't say that I rejected a lot, or just a few that didn't quite fit. And I really wanted this to people to their childhood. Wish there was something like they have on NPR StoryCorps in all Florida public, so that people could just go and record this and remember it. Be a wonderful certain public libraries, because there's so much material out there. Some of the best storytellers I know worked for Road, or they were accountants, or they're surgeons. And, you know, a lot of us who do this for a living are published. The other great storyteller often do not. So I would like to put out, I'd like to have a library, something like that. And I would like to sort of make the series, because I don't know if I could continue it myself. I'd just like to see something like this continue.
William, you are breaking up a little bit. Perhaps in the room you're in, you could just sort of try for, get next to a window or something and see if we can't get a little bit better signal from you.
I hadn't really moved.
Well, something moved.
Can you hear me any better?
The earth moved. Yes, I can hear you better now. most of the contributors submitted memoirs and poems, but at least two, and I'm thinking of Carl Hyacin and Tim Dorsey, submitted works of fiction, and they're both well known as fictional writers. Why didn't you ask them to step out of character for this? Or is it your opinion their fictional characters are so informed by the Florida experience that there's really no point of demarcation?
Well, when I read that first chapter of Flush by Carl Hyacin, I thought, this is perfect. And you know, he was gracious enough to give it to me and waved his fee. When we all started talking about doing this book, and really Jeff was very important in convincing me to do it and encouraging me, and so was Tim Dorsey. And Tim thought he wanted to use that particular piece from Florida Roadkill. And after I read it, I thought, well, it's not really about childhood, but it sort of is, and it kind of sets the agenda. So I made that the first piece in the book. The piece that Michael Connelly wrote is a story he's told before, but he wrote this one just for the book, and it's about how he happened to see a crime occur as a young boy. He's 15 or 16, I forget what. And that changed the trajectory of his life, because, of course, today he's a great novelist who writes about crime. And the Tom Petty story is also about a life-changing moment when he was sitting in the yard, and his uncle or his aunt came up to him and said, hey, Elvis is making a movie. You want to go meet him? And that changed his life. And there's a lot of stuff in here, I think, about these momentous things and their roots in childhood. So that's not exactly the theme I was exploring, but it ends up, I think, coming through in several of the pieces.
You know, one of the things about this book, and, you know, I probably should say that, you know, somebody could publish a book like this in every state, because every state would have some unique stories. But as Bill mentioned earlier, I mean, Florida is one of the most special. And, you know, when we think of the Florida experience, I mean, you can live on the beach. You can live on a lake. You can be in an urban situation, and of course you can live, you know, where there are these dinosaurs that we call alligators. We're a state now with 18 million people, and, you know, art galleries and major universities, great restaurants, major league sports, but, you know, you can go swimming at the wrong place, and you can be devoured by one of these dinosaurs, and which we don't wish on anybody. But it makes Florida a different place. There's not a state quite like it. You know, you can go to Alaska and where there are brown bears, but it's not the civilization, the sophisticated cosmopolitan place that Florida is. So, you know, even in the 50s, when my parents moved to Miami in 1951, there were 2 million people. You know, Florida was on the way to being a very civilized, largely populated state, but still, you had all that water and all that wilderness, and here it is. You know, we're in the 21st century, and you know, we have more alligators and crocodiles than ever. We have down where you are, Valerie. I mean, we have lions, Florida panthers. We have bears walking into Orlando now. What a place to live, and what a place to be a writer. And for somebody like me and for somebody like Carl Hyacin or Tim Dorsey, it's just it's a gold mine.
Fabiola Santiago wrote a great piece titled The Year of Dreaming about growing up Cuban in Miami. Do you think it's the same today, or has the great assimilation taken place? Jeff, you grew up in Miami.
I don't know. I'm sure there are, you know, I haven't lived down there in 35 years. I do get down there from time to time. But that's one of my favorite pieces in the book. I'm sure it's a little like that, but it's also different, too. I mean, Florida is changing all the time.
You know, what really struck me was Kristen Hamel wrote My Field of Dreams about getting hired to write professionally about baseball at the age of 16. And do you think that could happen in today's Florida?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think, you know, you have to know Kristen, I think, but that's she's a very small person, but she has a very large ability to charm people, so I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. That was just probably 10 years ago. She's one of the younger can well
yeah help. Yeah, that was
she must be in her 30s now, so probably 15 or 20 years ago.
So
you know, it was very funny that when I read that I really identified with that because, you know, in the 50s and 60s, I mean, we called it the Grapefruit League now, and I guess maybe they still do all the spring training teams that played here, and some of those fields were not much more developed than a big little league field. And so, if you were a kid in Florida in the 50s and 60s in the spring, you had this amazing access to players. And I remember one time my dad taking me to see the Chicago White Sox play the Washington Senators in Pompano Beach, and basically, you know, under the stands, the players were just walking around. And I was a White Sox fan of all teams, and I remember seeing one of my heroes buying a hot dog, and just walked up to him and asked for an autograph. And it was the player was Louis Aparicio, who I think is in the Hall of Fame. And he said, sure, kid, and he handed me his hot dog while he signed, you know, and I think there's I would just die to have that scorecard. And then after the game, I mean, running across the field and scooping up balls, and it was just what a thing. Now, I don't know that that could happen today.
I don't
probably
know.
Be easier to maybe go and meet the public relations person and say, hey, you know, I know I'm only 16, but maybe I could write a story. But it was something else then. I have a friend who passed away recently at the age of 90, who grew up in St. Petersburg, who used to work at a bait and tackle store. And whenever I went in there, Mike, his name was Mike Mastery, liked to show me this picture of himself with Babe Ruth, taken in the late 20s in St. Petersburg when the Yankees trained in St. Petersburg. And Mike would skip school during spring training. He'd go over to the Woolworths, the 5 and 10 store, and buy a couple dozen baseballs for whatever, a quarter apiece. And then he would go to Al Lang Field, where the Yankees trained, and wait for the game to be over. And then when Babe Ruth would walk off the field, and he was very accessible and very social, he would stop and sign all these baseballs for Mike Mastry. And then Mike would sell them for a couple bucks to the tourists. And Mike said that one day he was doing that. He was working Babe Ruth for to sign these balls. And another teammate said, "Ah, Babe, you're just helping this kid rip off the tourists." But Babe said, "No, I don't mind." Babe liked the fact that Mike was hustling. So, you know, there it was in the 21st century, and I would go into Mastry's to maybe buy a dozen live shrimp to go fishing, and Mike would bring out this picture of Mike and Babe Ruth in 1928. You know, it was just great, and that was the kind of thing that could happen in Florida.
A lot's happened in Florida, and you know, I haven't talked too much about poetry, and as a reader, I don't know, for some reason, for a lot of my life, I've steered clear of poetry. I don't know why, but I read a couple of the poems in the book, Down in the Orange Grove, which really says it all about the pace of development in Florida, really powerful poem. And then another poem, and I don't recall the name of the author, but it was called Mayport, 1975, and that really packed a lot in. William, I guess you had a specific reason for choosing that piece to go in the book.
Oh, the poet Terry Yomes-Graham is someone I'd met at a writer's conference, and she gave me her book of poetry, and that was in it. And I said, you know, this is just a total downer, but I got to use this. This is such a great poem because it's about a childhood memory of being killed in a fire because the parent, I think, was drunk. But you know what Jeff was saying, spring train, was projected to say, well, the problem with spring train, that it's all mostly Disney-fied.
Hey, Bill, you're breaking up.
You're breaking up again.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. It has changed a lot. I remember going to Al Lang back when I used to live in Tampa and went to Al Lang all the time. And I used to go there and see the Mets play the Cardinals, and you could, like, even then, and this was back in the 80s, you could get, like, I remember getting Ron Darling to sign a ball and stuff like that. And it was wonderful. And they had that, there was an old African-American gentleman there who used to sing and sell hot dogs. Remember him?
Tommy Walton, yes. He was wonderful. And I mean, he was this old-timer, and he'd grown up in the St. Petersburg area selling vegetables that way from a wagon. And he had learned this craft, so to speak, from his uncle, where they would ride through a neighborhood in this wagon, and they would sing loudly about what they had to sell that day. And so he transposed that folk culture to Allied Field.
Yeah.
And he used to wear this apron that said... It said The Voice. It was from the magazine The Village Voice, but he would wear that apron. And he was a hoot.
He was
a hoot.
Well, somebody please buy some of my cold hot dogs.
Tube steaks. He used to call them tube steaks. And it just made spring training something special.
That was it. It was always special going there. I loved it. I really did. I moved to Florida as a kid in the 1960s to Stuart, and I was one of many new kids in school who had come from out of state at that time. Many of us, I came from New York. Was that, in your opinion, perhaps the beginning of when the mass migration started, like in the mid to late 1960s, with just droves of people all of a sudden coming down here, lured by central air conditioning and mosquito control.
Are you talking to Jeff or me?
I'm talking to whoever wishes to address that. I mean, at Martin County High, in my class, I was there were probably five or six of us in our homeroom who had just moved to Florida, like in 1969, 1970.
You know,
yeah, I lived in Florida in the early 60s on Homestead Air Force Base, and that was during the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it was a very frightening period of life for a little kid. But I remember the area around there so well, and whenever I go back to South Florida, it's just that these rural areas have become, entirely works of concrete. And I think that the great growth happened around the time you're talking about, because when I came back in the 70s, South Florida had changed. I came back to work for the Palm Beach Post, and then I came back in the 80s to teach at University of Florida. And, you don't even recognize the haunts of your childhood anymore.
And you, yeah. Jeff, you go back to Miami?
It started in after the war, and then it just kept building. A lot of people had served, the military in Florida, and they came here. And I'm glad you mentioned air conditioning. I mean, that made Florida a place that a lot of Northerners could feel comfortable. When my parents moved from Chicago to Miami in 1951, we moved into, my parents were very, working class. I mean, very few people had air conditioning. It was only rich people. And I can still, my mother hated everything about Florida, just the heat. She was a city girl, moved to Miami in June of 1951. It's raining. It's humid. There's palmetto bugs in the silverware drawer. I don't think she ever recovered from that. Even when my parents, finally got a house with air conditioning. My father then would drag her camping, and there'd be, spiders in the restroom or whatever. She was a great storyteller though, and Beatrice married Grace O'Donnell, and I think I got that from her. But my dad loved everything about it. My dad was a dreamer, and he was a musician, and his dream was to move to Miami from Chicago, where the nightclub scene was, kind of heating up, and there'd be more gigs for him. And he tried that for a while, and then he had to get a day job like most musicians do. And he worked at the Fountain Blue Hotel on Miami Beach for 25 years, which, of course, attracted other dreamers. But, Florida has been attracting dreamers since Ponce de Leon 500 years ago. I mean, he stepped ashore hoping to find gold. And my dad crossed the border hoping to find, a gig where he could play big band music. So lots of things change, and lots of things really don't change.
Jeff Klinkenberg, Thomas Wolfe wrote, "You can't go home again." Is that true for all places at all times, but perhaps particularly so for Florida?
When I go back to Miami, I still enjoy going back to Miami, even though I don't have any family there anymore. I like the... I go to certain places that have pleasant memories for me. I always drive down my old neighborhood. I drive past the Catholic school where the nuns used to discipline me for looking out the windows. I do go to the place where my friend died. I go to the beach. I go to places where my dad took my brother and me fishing. So I go to those places. The things that make me crazy is just the sprawl, of Miami. Getting from one place to the other just takes a long time. and that's depressing. However, I mean, the bay is, Biscayne Bay is, always looks beautiful to me. Everglades National Park, there's a lot of things better than when I was a kid, because we've learned something, and, you know, there's more environmental protections and so forth. So I'm not one of those people who say that Florida is gone. It kind of irks me a little bit because some things, a lot of things aren't going. Everything has changed, of course, but if you go exploring, you see things that are as they have always been.
We are just about out of time, so I want to one more question for you, Jeff. What's coming up next for you?
I have a new book collection of essays coming out in the spring, called "Alligators in B Flat." That's the title essay. And there are a bunch of essays from the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's going to be published by the University Press of Florida. The other thing, and I hope you don't mind me mentioning this, is Jack Perkins of PBS and Clyde Butcher and I are doing a benefit on January 18th. It's going to be in Sarasota at the Girl Scout Event Conference Center. And it's going to be to raise awareness and some money for Florida scrub jay habitat restoration at Oscar Scherer State Park. And it's going to cost $30 to get in, and here's a phone number for people who might like to go. It's 941-483-5956. But it should be an interesting morning. It starts at 10 a.m.
Okay, and William McKean, what's next for you? I know you're on break from school.
I've been asked to write a screenplay, and the movie is set in Florida, so I just can't seem to get away from Florida.
So, wow.
Very exciting.
What kind of movie? Real quick, can you tell us?
Yeah, it's going to be about kids in Florida.
All right.
It sort of grows out of this book.
Okay, that's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear. The book is Homegrown in Florida from the University Press of Florida, and this is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. William and Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to be here.